It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll take your calls about your favorite games, board games, card games, games with a group, or all on your own. We want to hear about them. That's coming up next. First, police crime data shows homicides and non-fatal shootings in Milwaukee are on the rise again this year after setting new records in 2020 and 2021. On May 13th, 21 people were injured in a series of shootings near the downtown Deer District, prompting calls for more action and investment in public safety. Here's Milwaukee Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson in a recent interview with PBS Wisconsin.
Every year this becomes a topic, especially for elected officials who represent Milwaukee. And we can never get help, never get help. But, you know, once it hits the Deer District, then it becomes an issue of concern during campaign time. And this is an issue of concern every single day for the people who live here.
Many communities around the country are dealing with gun violence issues similar to those in Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How worried are you about gun violence in Wisconsin? What do you think, if anything, is making the problem worse? What solutions would you point to? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Richard Rosenfeld is Curator's Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. He's a fellow and past president of the American Society of Criminology. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
A lot of different factors can go into rising gun violence. What do you see as potential likely causes that we see in communities around the country?
Well, I think two come immediately to mind. One, of course, is the pandemic. Milwaukee, as well as most other cities in the United States, saw a large homicide increase in 2020, the first year of the pandemic. And Milwaukee continued to go up last year, as did other cities on average, although the rate of increase slowed somewhat last year. And through the first quarter of this year, with respect to homicide rates, homicide is basically flat, no increase over the first quarter of last year. But that's an average, and some cities, evidently Milwaukee, are seeing an uptick in the first quarter of this year. Other cities have not.
I've talked to gun researchers, gun fatality researchers in the past who said, you know, we have multiple different problems. One might be mass shootings, like sadly we saw last week. One might be gun suicides. When it comes to the kind of crimes that are driving these statistics we're talking about in cities, is there, I guess, a modal situation, a typical situation where an argument leads into gun violence? What are the specific factors involved in a lot of these shootings?
It's a good question. And I would say the modal shooting situation has not changed, even though the rate of shootings has gone up over the last couple of years in Milwaukee and elsewhere. But the situation remains pretty much the same. The situation typically involves two young men, sometimes more, but basically two young men in an argument over any number of things. It could be an argument over money. If they're both involved in illegal activity, it could be an argument over the spoils from that activity. One dies in the encounter. That hasn't changed. That typical situation has remained pretty much the same over a long period of time. What has changed is the frequency of the fatalities that result from those situations.
Are there points where we could intervene, where we could find the people who are likely to be involved in these disputes that escalate in gun violence and, I don't know, turn them to another path of problem solving?
Yes, there are. There is a program that has been in existence now for several years. It goes under the title Focused Deterrence, Basically, what it involves is identifying people at highest risk for becoming the next perpetrator or the next victim in an act of violence, and bringing those people into meetings with criminal justice officials, police, representatives of the prosecutor's office, judges, and with service providers. And often those meetings are also attended by family members of the individual and other members of their community, such as a local minister. And a two-prong message is delivered at those meetings. One is, we obviously know who you are, and we'll do everything within our power to ensure that you're not the next victim or the next perpetrator. And if you are the next perpetrator, we'll do everything in our power to make sure that you're punished for the behavior. Secondly, the message is, if you want out of this life, here are services and supports that can help. And the choice is yours. Those meetings turn out to be very effective in reducing the level of gun violence in the areas where they're held. And in a few studies, I've conducted one of them, we find that the participants in those meetings go on to accumulate fewer arrests than a randomly selected group of participants who or persons who did not participate in the meetings. So we have good evidence that that program is effective. It's relatively low cost. Those meetings can be held frequently. They can be held wherever in the city the problem of gun violence or other problems, we're focusing on gun violence today, where those problems are heavily concentrated. So the answer to your question is yes, there are points of intervention that do appear to be effective.
There are calls often when we see any violent crime numbers go up for more police funding or more police. I wanted to ask you, is there a best way to use a finite resources? Is it putting more patrol officers on streets? Is it more community policing? Is it more homicide detectives, or fill in the blank for me?
My answer is yes, yes, and yes. So the sheer number of officers, while not unimportant, is less significant than where and how those officers are deployed. If they are deployed in those areas of the city, and these can be relatively small areas where gun violence is heavily concentrated or where it has recently increased, elevating patrols in those areas, the research suggests, does tend to reduce gun violence. And by the way, without spreading it to other areas where the patrols have not been beefed up. Now, having said that, that approach has been criticized regardless of its effectiveness in reducing gun violence, it can often, the critics say, result in needless harassment of the young men in the community when there are more police officers around. And that obviously has to be avoided. And there's good research suggesting that it can be avoided. So this is an approach that does not necessarily have negative consequences for the communities in which it operates, and can reduce gun violence.
We're talking about gun violence in Milwaukee and other communities with University of Missouri St. Louis criminology professor Rick Rosenfeld. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you want to see gun violence addressed in communities like Milwaukee? Do you think there needs to be more of a police presence? Does that mean more funding? What is your solution? What's your experience with this issue? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Rick Rosenfeld, Professor Emeritus of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, with us today looking at some of the causes and possible solutions for gun violence in large cities like Milwaukee, where over the last couple of years we saw the numbers unfortunately go up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your questions about gun violence? How would you like to see communities address the issue? How would you like to see police departments address the issue? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We got an email from Linda who writes, in my opinion, the most urgent plan of action would be to ban all assault-type rifles across the board. That would be a start in the right direction. Rick, I know with targeted mass shootings, the ones with the high fatalities that we see in the news, those are often the weapons we're talking about. In our conversation now, that escalating violence, do we know what kind of firearms are most typically used?
There's a variety, but I think the important point, this goes to the issue raised by your listener, is that over time, the fraction of weapons used in crime on the streets involve automatic or semi-automatic type weapons with large capacity magazines, that fraction has gone up over time. And I do think that one of the reasons we're seeing more homicides, not just in the last couple of years, but going back some time, is the fact that these types of weapons, these more lethal weapons, are more frequently used. And that means the shooter can get off more rounds in a relatively short period of time. And the more rounds that are discharged, the more likely it is that someone will be hit or killed. So the lethality of the firearm and the use of these more lethal weapons is not an issue that's specific to mass shootings, though clearly a salient issue in that respect. But it's an issue that affects homicide rates generally.
I should ask about relationships between police departments and communities and cities, especially communities of color. We've just had the couple-year anniversary now of the death of George Floyd. How big a part of the story do you think that that lack of, I guess, trust between communities can be part of this story?
I think it's in a very, very important part of the story. There's reason to believe that the sharp increase we saw in homicides and other forms of gun violence in 2020 was connected to the widespread disaffection with the police after the George Floyd killing. In my own research, what I found is that in most cities, the homicide rate rose sharply, not at the beginning of the pandemic or even in the first month or two, but in the week following George Floyd's killing on May 25th, 2020. And that elevated rate persisted through the summer and into the early fall. So what was happening then? Widespread demonstrations across the country against police violence, police misconduct, greater calls for police accountability. And under those conditions, what in my business is called police legitimacy, the perceived fairness and effectiveness of the police diminishes, especially in those communities where police-related violence tends to be concentrated. And as fewer people have confidence in the police, they're less likely to engage with the police, less likely to cooperate in investigations, less likely to notify the police if they become aware of a crime being committed. And all of that puts upward pressure on crime rates. So police community relations has to be at the top of anybody's list of areas that really do require reform.
And briefly, just in our last minute or so, the ubiquity of guns, is there a sort of a game theory here where if I know my somebody I'm in an argument has a gun. They know I have a gun. Is that incentivizing being the first one to escalate to using a gun? Is that part of the story?
Oh, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Yeah, absolutely. No matter who you ask, you can ask law-abiding people, or you can ask people who use guns in the commission of a crime. Why did you purchase the gun? The overwhelming answer, no matter who you ask, is for my own protection while out on the streets or indeed in my home. And that, why do people purchase a gun? For their own protection, because of their perception that guns are out there. And if they don't have them, have a weapon of that sort, they could be on the losing end of an encounter. So the ubiquity of guns is self-generating, as you suggest, and it is a major problem.
We'll leave it there, Rick. Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Richard Rosenfeld is Curator's Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. He's a fellow and past president of the American Society of Criminology. He joined us today to try to help us better understand gun violence in large cities around the country, including Milwaukee. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about finding a connection with nature.
Sometimes an experience touches us in ways we never would have imagined. Over a long Memorial Day weekend, writer Ron Weber witnessed a doe mourning the loss of her fawn, causing him to reflect on the similarities and connections between humans and nature.
Though sunny weather was forecast, my Memorial Day weekend plans did not include picnics or fishing. Yard chores and planting the garden was my fate. Pulling in the driveway Friday after work, I saw my neighbor had cut his first crop of hay. That aroma reminded me of the plethora of sights and smells that make this month of rebirth such a joy, and how much even we humans live with the rhythm of the seasons. Just after supper, as I walked towards the garden, I saw a deer in the field. With deer so plentiful, I never gave it a second look. Finishing my task an hour later, I saw the deer had not moved. Then I knew. Rising just after dawn, the deer was my first thought. I went to an upstairs window, hoping for an empty field. That hope was dashed when I saw a deer walking close to where I had seen it the evening before. I watched the doe walk through the field searching, until I couldn't watch anymore, so I distracted myself with breakfast. Working around the yard, I paused often to look in the field. Each time, there she was. Though often in the area I had first seen her, she also walked the perimeter and through the field searching, and I surmised, hoping. I was still hoping, too, when about 1 p.m., an eagle circled twice and glided to a landing 10 yards from the doe. It took a couple short hops and began feeding. The doe looked on as the eagle feasted. There was no denying my own sadness now. The eagle fed for a bit and took wing. The doe approached with her head low, and there she stood. As dark crept over the field, she was standing near where the eagle had fed. Call it instinct, dedication, love, whatever it was something to behold. A restless night of sleep followed. In the morning, I rose and headed for the window. I saw a large animal I thought at first glance was a wolf. Instead, it was a big coyote enjoying the spoils. The doe was standing 30 yards away. She sidled in until finally the coyote would have no more. It feigned a charge which sent the doe running. It returned to feed for another 5 minutes before racing towards the woods. The doe made her way back, and there she stood. That evening, I helped my wife prepare a new flower bed. Carrying weeds and sticks to the corner of our yard, through a gap in two spruce trees, I saw a deer 20 yards away in the field. Our eyes locked. I still recall what I saw in those eyes. It was sadness. Was it just the doe's, or a reflection of mine as well? I'm not sure. I tossed my load under the spruce. The doe never moved. I dropped my eyes, turned, walked away, and never looked back. Darkness mercifully came. That evening, I realized I knew better what Alden Leopold meant when he wrote, "For one species to mourn the death of another is a new thing under the sun. I dozed off and slept like a rock. The next morning, the doe was gone. At noon, the farmer baled the hay. The curtain had fallen on this play. The stage was cleared and the actors left. In my memory, I would save the ticket stub from my weekend with the doe, in which I learned more not only about the nature of animals, but human nature as well.
Ron Weber is a writer and forester who lives in Weyerhaeuser. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
Coming up after the news, we want to hear from you. We're taking your calls on your favorite games, and you can get started right now at 800-642-1234. What's a game that you love to play? Do you have good memories of playing games with your friends, families, maybe solo games? You could call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also share your story over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Looking to hear about your favorite game memories, past and present, or what you're hoping to play maybe over the course of this summer. We'll take your calls coming up. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we try to use evidence in our arguments in courts, politics, and our daily lives. But what is it? We'll talk to the author of the new book, The Proof. Now, it can be good to give ourselves a little break, to have some fun, and what's more fun than games? Not much, I say. There's board games, card games, group games, solo games. The list goes on, and right now, we want to hear your favorite and what it means to you. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What game do you love to play right now? What game do you have a great memory of playing? Do you have a regular crew you play with? Friends, family, enemies? What's a memory you have playing games recently or from when you were a kid? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post, as some have, on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. We asked around here at WPR at PBS Wisconsin, got a bunch of responses. Here's what we heard from WPR's senior regional manager, Lisa Nalbandian.
My husband Mike and I started playing Rummy during the pandemic. I think we started in October of 2020. I remember feeling so excited to be able to go to Walgreens and buy a notebook so we could keep score of our game. And we've been keeping the same score in the same notebook ever since. The other night, our kids saw us play, and they asked when we were going to be done with this never-ending game. And I very casually replied, well, we'll be done when one of us dies.
Now, she mentioned that running tally, in case you were wondering.
Our current score as of today is 38,755 to 37,720, and I'm in the lead.
That is a long-running game of Rummy. Now, how about you? What's your game story? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your favorites. Let's go to a caller now. Marcia is with us in Stevens Point. Marcia, hi.
Hi.
What's your game, Marcia?
My game is a card game called Jump the Deck.
Jump the Deck.
While I was vacationing in Florida about 5 or 6 years ago, I needed something to do, so I invented a card game, and it's apparently very addicting.
Oh, how does it? Okay, so A, I'm glad you said you invented it because I never heard of it, and it's hard to stump me, I feel like. What? Give us the basics. How does jump the deck work?
Well, there are four cards laid out on each side of the deck. There are two decks. You play in suit on these four piles. Everybody plays on them. If you're the one who lays down at least the fourth card, you get to take those cards. That's positive points. And anything you're stuck with in your hand is negative points.
Aha.
And when a friend from India brought all her friends over so that I could teach them all how to play, and some of them even spoke English. It was a lot of fun. So she explained to one of them, no, you can't move sideways. Your plays must jump over the deck. So after a year of play, it finally got a name.
Jump the deck. Marcia, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Wow, a game, an actual game designer calling in. That's fantastic. How about you? Do you have a game, a story you'd like to share? Join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a big fan or are you allergic to games based on unpleasant family dynamics surrounding games? What is your favorite? Do you have a great childhood memory? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Patrick on Facebook who says Patrick's favorite games are Pinochle, Sheep's Head, and chess. Now, I've played some chess. Sheep's Head, I've learned, played it once or twice, not enough to get into it. Pinochle, I feel like, is comparable in complexity. I've been playing that since I was a kid. I still have a weekly standing Pinochle game with my folks. My wife plays sometimes with us, my brother sometimes. Pinochle is a great game, and it can always surprise you. So thanks a lot for sharing that, Patrick. How about you call in with your favorite game of all time, the games you love to play, where you play them? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We asked around our WPR colleagues. Chris Deering from Business Sponsorship Team put in a vote for Clue. But Chris says, as a kid, I loved Clue, rediscovered it through my own kids in the last few years. We love it so much, we made our own version. Chris says, instead of the billiards room in the conservatory, we have the kids' bedrooms, a family room in the garage, instead of Professor Plum and Mrs. Scarlet. We have our own family members, including our two cats. I think the cats did it. I'm just going to say that. That's my guess right now. The cats did it. I don't know the room. I don't know the weapon. Your turn, 800-642-1234 is the number to call or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jerry writes on the Facebook page, Bridge. Jerry says it's a very challenging game on a par with chess. Yeah, I feel like the basic rules weren't that hard. The strategy for bidding and the strategy for playing, yeah, that's kind of a lifetime to master sort of scenario. Jerry, thanks for that. Let's go to our callers now, 800-642-1234. Emily is with us in Madison. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
What's your game?
Well, my game is, actually, I found it in a little free library around the corner from my house. It's called Rome, and it is fantastic. It's like Tetris meets competitive Tetris, and my husband and I have been playing it all through the pandemic. It's awesome for two players or four players.
This is a board game that's like Tetris?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a board game that you lay out different cards and you can play, and they have like six slots in each of them that you can play sort of your colored token into, and you want to claim the card by putting as many of your colored tokens on that card as possible. And then as you claim cards, you get new arrangements that you can place your tokens in.
Cool. And it's R-O-M-E, like the city, not R-O-A-M?
It's R-O-A-M.
Oh.
Like you are roaming. But it has a whole story behind it where people, you're picking up these cards and they have characters on the back of them because they've been lost, and it'll give you a little like, this person was doing this as they were lost and forgot who they were or what they were doing.
Interesting. Emily, thank you so much for sharing that with us. R-O-A-M, I guessed wrong on that one. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Luke is with us now in Oshkosh. Hi, Luke.
Hi.
What's your game?
It's the game of Go. It's a game that, well, quite a bit more complex than chess, actually. It's about surrounding more territory than your opponent. A lot of fun.
How long have you been playing Go, Luke?
Since 2016, there was some big news that came out about a computer that could finally play at the pro level, and that's how I heard about it.
Yeah, it was harder for them to do a computer for Go. This is this like big abstract game. Harder to do Go for computers than chess, right? That was why it was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a really big deal because the game, it's like you have to almost have a human's intuition to be able to deduct and make choices. You have to have a really interesting way of thinking about it.
I got to say, Luke, I have a Go set. I know how to play it. I've learned it. I'm terrible at it. I'm really bad at Go. Have you gotten good?
Yeah, I recommend for anyone to check out twitch.tv/Dwyeran. He's a Go player that is like a very high level, and I learned from him. He's just fun to watch. And I even started a Go club in Oshkosh, and I go to the one in Madison sometimes too. So there's like options in the area.
Awesome. Luke, thanks a lot for sharing. Go is a great game. Yeah, I recommend it highly. Good for the brain, it seems like. We are taking your calls and comments about games you love to play, past or present, who you play them with, games as a social activity. You can join in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Again, we asked around WPR and PBS Wisconsin. I want to give a listen to another story. This is from WPR's Second Century News fellow, Christine Hatfield, with a love of games.
You know, I actually co-founded and ran a board game club in my undergrad years because that's how highly I thought of board games, and I still think of them pretty highly now, even if a lot of them have been collecting dust for the last 2 years and a bit. I mean, I just love board games because of how they bring people together. I mean, I just love how you can get an insight into how somebody thinks by playing a game.
Very true. Thanks a lot for that, Christine. We are talking about the games we love to play, what they mean to us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite board game, card game, or do you like to play lots of different ones? Do you have a less well-known one that you love? You want to spread the word about it? Do you have a favorite memory of time spent with friends or family? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about your favorite games and why you love them. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Was there a game you loved as a kid? Are you keeping the Midwestern Euchre or Pinochle traditions alive? Or you name it, what is the game you love to play? Or do you have and play lots of them, like me? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. George is with us in Wanakee. George, hi.
Hi there.
What's your
as
game?
As a kid, I used to hate the game of Scrabble because the players, we spent so much time arranging the letters as they were flying off of the board. And so as an old man now, I went out and invested in a deluxe version of this thing with a really nice Lazy Susan and a raised edged board. So when you put a tile down, it stays in place. And the other really big side benefit of this is for a 75-year-old man, it's really a wonderful way of trying aspects of my memory. So I really enjoy it these days.
Fantastic. What is it that led you to go out and get the deluxe version if you had those bad memories as a kid?
Well, I saw an ad for a vintage model that was literally made out of wood, and it was deeply discounted because it was quite expensive. And I thought, hey, you know, I got a raise in my Social Security check. I can afford this. And I went out and got it.
All right, George, happy scrabbling. Thanks for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Trudy joins us now in Shell Lake. Trudy, hi.
Hi. My kids and I have learned to play the game of Sequence, mm-hmm. which is a board game with chips with a lot of strategy involved. So that's a good brain teaser for us. And while we were on vacation in South Dakota 1 year, I found a game at the resort called Deer in the Headlights, cards and dice. And man, oh man, when we're in deer country up here in northern Wisconsin, it's a game that's spot on for us.
Exactly, Trudy. And any of that is going to be more fun than playing Candyland with the kids, I imagine, right?
way more fun.
Thank you so much, Trudy. Great. Deer in the Headlights. I hadn't heard of that one. We are taking your calls with your favorite games at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Lois on Facebook writes, cribbage is the game of choice. My mom and I played every time I visited her. She was in her 90s and much better than I was. And wraps up with 15-2, 15-4, part of the scoring in cribbage. I've played cribbage some lately. We pull it out, play it with my mother-in-law. It's an excellent game. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Leanne is with us in Madison. Leanne, what's your game?
Well, we've been playing Rummy Cube, but lately we've gotten into train dominoes, which is really a hoot.
Yeah, train. I've played a few different kinds of dominoes, like chicken foot is one. What is train again? How does that work?
So train, you have to have your train is either open or it's closed. So you have to, you can't play on anybody else's train unless their train is open. So it really makes it, there's a lot of strategy involved. And it's really, we've been having a lot of fun doing it, whether it's just two of us or four of us playing.
And is it one where you end up with like, oh, I can't play, so I got to draw, and you end up with like 20 dominoes in front of you?
Yep. You can be down to one, and next thing you know, you've got, 20 in front of you. Exactly.
That's life for you. Leanne, thanks a lot for sharing that. Dominoes, a lot of good games coming up here. We are taking your favorite games, your gaming memories. Do you need a recommendation? I might have one. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jenny joins us now in Madison. Jenny, what do you have for us?
Hi, I have Farkle and Balderdash.
Now, Balderdash I've played. I've seen Farkle. What is it?
Farkle's a dice game which involves luck, strategy, and risk, and it's really fast and fun.
So you have to kind of push your luck? Is that the risk element? Like, I could keep my points or I could keep going?
Exactly. Okay. Yes. So you're six dice, and then you can continue or keep your points.
Oh, yeah. They didn't call it that, but I played a version of that. That's pretty cool. And Balderdash, is that the one where you make up dictionary definitions?
Yeah, Fictionary. You can do it. You can buy the game, or you can do Fictionary just with a dictionary. Yeah. So you get points for knowing the correct definition of obscure words, or you get points by tricking others by having a compelling definition.
And do you play this with friends, family, a little of both?
Yes.
Excellent. Jenny, thank you so much for calling in at 800-642-1234. We heard from Aaron Cook in our HR department at Wisconsin Public Media. Aaron says, my family plays gin rummy, but we don't joke around. Aaron says there was one memorable occasion where my cousins and I surreptitiously served my uncle a few beverages, then cajoled him into a tournament. He ended up paying out roughly $200. Now he won't play gin with us anymore. Wow. Okay, that's something. Thanks, Aaron. Now, how about you? 800-642-1234. Gloria is with us now in Madison. Gloria, hi.
Hi. I just had to call in because Thanksgiving is our big family get-together, and we usually have about 20 people, and we always play charades. Even the five-year-olds play charades, and it's for fun, and we laugh about it, and we remember from year to year the funny things that have happened, and once in a while we even take a picture. So not competitive. I mean, we keep score, but it doesn't matter.
Sure. Now, are there people who are legendary either for their charades genius or their charades confusingness?
Well, I have one grandson that had the bee movie, and he went around trying to be a bumblebee, and it was very funny. And every year somebody puts in the, the selections, the bee movie.
Excellent, Gloria. Thanks. That sounds like a lot of fun. That's a good Thanksgiving tradition, too. You know, not too much thinking when you're weighted down with all the Thanksgiving food. Still time for your favorite games at 800-642-1234. We've got a call out from Digital Dave in Superior. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon.
You've got a game for us, I think.
Yeah, we're playing Pandemic. Mm-hmm. We started playing in 2019, in the fall of 2019, and lo and behold.
Yeah. So now, I've played Pandemic.
To get rid of it.
Yeah, that's one where you work together. You're all on the same team trying to stop all the diseases going around.
It is. And we've got a bunch of kids, and like 10 and then 9 grandkids. And so it's a big thing for us. But right now they're all kind of grown. So it's just, the wifey wife and me.
Do you
for the most part. So some of these games are really good. There's a really great website. I don't want to drop a website. It's not my website. It's a big site that I think maybe a lot of people would like because it's all board games.
And that's boardgamegeek.com, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I'll mention it. I've spent many an hour, and unfortunately I've spent many a dollar based on my time spent there, Dave. Some caution because you can find lots of games you want to get.
There's a lot of games out there, and they just keep coming out. You know, we've got some old ones, too. We've got an old Cab Calloway game that's a collectible, but, you know, it's not worth that much. But the point is that they've changed throughout the years. Yeah. Now, you know, games are imitating life, which are imitating games, you know, instead of art.
Dave, thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Central Time producer Emily Burdett says she loves Dominion, a multiplayer deck-building game, played a lot with her college roommates right after college classes went fully remote during the pandemic. Playing online, Emily says playing board games together was the peace of mind I needed back then when there was so much uncertainty, not to mention it's tons of fun. Yeah, there's the Dominion I've played a lot of. And yeah, I switched to playing a lot of games online during the pandemic. Let's go back to your calls now with Wendy in Irma. Wendy, hi.
Hi.
What are you playing, Wendy?
Risk. Love the game. Played it in the military. I learned how to play it with a bunch of Marines in the military. And I still love that game to this day.
And what's your strategy?
Nothing. I just try to take over the southern part of the world and just sit down there by myself.
All right. And do you win pretty often at Risk?
It depends on who I'm playing with.
True.
But,
and you got
the
dice,
too. You
got
to have a lot of time on your hands.
Definitely. Wendy, thank you so much. Risk, that's a classic. Let's get some more callers here. Nancy is with us in Wanakee. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I just have a tip. I'm playing. I've played games, board games and card games, and a lot of the ones you've mentioned I've played and others that I like. But when we were young, we chummed with a series of about six different couples, and ages went from about 4 years up to 42 and higher. And everybody wanted to be played. Somebody bring a game, whether it was Trivia Pursuit, which is what it was back then, but we've done it with other games, cribbage or train dominoes and that sort of thing. If you play teams, you get to include everybody. And with Trivia Pursuit, we'd have the little kids and the teenagers and the adults, and it was amazing how the adults wouldn't know something and the 8-year-old who had just studied it in school, I got the answer and everybody felt great. I've played it where people don't like to play games like Scrabble because they can't spell. But if you play teams, the ones that they can come up with an idea.
I love
and
it.
And someone else can spell it. And so everybody feels included. And it has always worked, no matter when you have a large group of people.
Nancy, I love it. I remember playing Trivial Pursuit in a big extended family, like five or six on a side, and great Uncle George, of course, would always insist on being the question reader. He didn't want to be on either team. One more caller. I think Ethan is with us in Madison. Ethan, hi.
Yeah, hey. No, one of the games we got really into during the pandemic, it's actually a board game. It's called Betrayal at House on the Hill. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah, it's like a horror board game, and one of you turns into the bad guy partway through. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's kind of got everything. It's like RPG, and it's got like a storyline. And yeah, halfway through the game, like you mentioned, somebody, you start out as a team, and then someone turns into this traitor halfway through. And there's all these different scenarios that the game provides you, I think like 100 or something.
Awesome. That's a fun one. Ethan, thanks for that. Okay, one more caller. Jude is with us in Long Lake. Hi, Jude.
Hi, how are you?
Well, good. What's your game, just real quick?
Pictionary, one of my favorites, because all the little kids can join in. It's a drawing thing, but you can do it with stick figures, so you don't have to be an artist.
Jude, thanks a lot. I am not an artist. I am bad at Pictionary, but it's still a lot of fun. Thanks to everybody who called in to share your favorite games. There's still time, though, to get your vote in. If you haven't yet, you can head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Share your game story. I might be able to share it through the rest of this week. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, Wisconsin needs more certified nursing assistants. Find out how a new funding program aims to bring more CNAs onto the job. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Picture the scene. You're at a creepy old ruins, and all around you, as far as the eye can see, are vampires. Is it a nightmare come to life or a new world record? As reported by the BBC, a gathering of vampire fans set a record over the weekend as the biggest gathering of people dressed as vampires. 1,369 people dressed up in dark capes, Victorian clothing, and fangs at Whitby Abbey in northern England. The event marks the 125th anniversary of the publication of Dracula by Bram Stoker, which was reportedly inspired by a trip there to visit Whitby Abbey. Just one problem. I can't tell what time this happened, but in all the pictures, sure looks a lot like daytime to me. I don't drink wine. This is Central Time.